For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. You're with Len Vidopic on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Len Vidopic Show, the final hour for me today, indeed for this weekend, as we look at the stories making the headlines. And coming up shortly, we've got one of the most creative and I think most courageous directors I've had the honour to meet and indeed hopefully to work with in the future, Naeem Mahmood. He'll be joining us shortly to talk about a film he's made, which is Gods of Our Own Religion. And last night, I saw a feature of the making of that film called No Budget, No Script, No Permission. He really is someone you want to listen to. He breaks all the rules that are taught in film school. And he did it very well. I'm much more conventional in how I make films. I also do that. We'll be comparing notes on air. I saw him last night and boy, the audience was as exciting as the film. We'll talk all about that in a short while. Mogden, could you possibly repost that lovely message about A Perfect Day? The reason is because it's so lively in the chat at the moment that I can't scroll up to get to it. Essentially, it's beautiful because Mogden was talking about the fact that we store away certain moments, certain days, in a matchbox, if you like, in our head. And Mogden, on one occasion, that while skiing, let everyone else go down the hill ahead and just looked at the white, looked at the scenery and said, I'll put that in my head too. And that's in relation to my perfect day with my brother, the last day I saw him alive. Neither he nor I knew he was going to die. It was sudden about a month later, but it was a perfect day. I remember when I was about 10, I discovered we were going to move house from a place I loved. It was in the countryside. And I stood and looked on a gate, and I remember taking a photograph in my head about that scene. And even as I talk, I can see this clearly as I can see the studio that I'm in now. That was one of the perfect moments in my life. I've got some other libraries in my head as well, which maybe are of a different kind, emotional perhaps, or even the physical memory of a terrible accident I had. This all ties into the conversation we had about nostalgia at the beginning of the show today. What is the nature of reality? At the end of the day, whatever you believe about reality, it only exists instantaneously in the present. The future has yet to happen. The past will never happen again. It depends what you believe, of course. But I am persuaded that something about the way that we see our lives anchors us to the unattainable or the lost. And if we can live in the present, it'll both reduce our sense of stress and increase our literally presence in the world about us. Mogden, if you can, if you're still with us, I haven't checked, but if you can repost that, I'll read exactly what you said. I was very touched by it. And thank you for the comments on that. My brother did not die tragically in the sense that I'd had 37 years and it was probably his time. Perhaps one reason that I love doing this show is because I haven't got an angle. I'm not trying to get people to a certain place. I express my opinions. I hope that sometimes you find them persuasive, but I don't need you to agree with me. Seb and I, who's a regular and active contributor here, doesn't always agree with me, but I enjoy the dialogue. It would be my dream one day when we celebrate the billionth viewer of TNT to reward those of you who are so active with a great party somewhere where we all meet and we go, so that's what you're like. I bet you we would all really enjoy each other's company if we met each other socially. Now, let's have a quick look before we go to see what Naeem has to say. I make films. I make serious productions, which are really pretty much in the same general lines as sort of content we have here. I hope that I shed some light, or at least some light through the filter of my world, which helps people understand things. But I also make some lighter films. And one of the ongoing projects, which I've been involved in for a long time, is called Mr. Calamari. It's a film about a British Brexiteer, a Conservative party member who votes for Brexit but doesn't like it. And he moves to Greece, where he settles on an island. And he decides that he can do island life and run the island better than the locals. And he does. It's a parody. It's gentle. It's not derogatory to anyone other than the main character himself. But ultimately, it's warm. There's no swearing, and there are no scenes that you would be concerned to let your children watch. But I follow the mainstream. I have a big team. I have producer, and I have line managers, and I have somebody with a clapperboard, and all of these things. And when we were filming just the trailer, just the 2.5 minute promotional video, which I'll probably put up on the internet sometime soon, we had a team of about 45, 50 people just to do that. Well, Naeem Mahmood doesn't follow that approach. In actual fact, he doesn't follow any orthodox approach, whatever. I was aghast last night at the airing in Soho, in fashionable Soho, central London, to learn how he made his film, a film which he'll explain in his own words shortly. And I was impressed and in awe of the fact that he put together one of the most riveting and, I think, evocative of film noir films that I've ever seen. Why was he able to do it? Because he thinks outside the box. Why doesn't anyone else do it? Because even I have been indoctrinated by the belief that you have to have a massive entourage of people and a set script using one of the standard systems. I use Final Draft, if anyone's interested. I haven't got sponsorship from them. I wish I did, but I don't. Whereas he didn't even have a script. The film, the documentary about the making of his film is called No Budget, No Script, No Permission. And that's because he didn't have a meaningful budget. He didn't have a script. The thing was pretty much improvised, though I get the sense that it developed its own agenda as we went through. And he didn't have permission to film a lot of what we see in it. And yet, together with his faithful and, I think, very loyal team, he created a thing of beauty. This film isn't for everybody. It requires a fairly strong stomach and a willingness to accept abrasive comments and, you might argue, a melancholy and quite an intimidating theme. But for those with the heart, the mind, and the fortitude to get from the beginning to the end, you will see a work of art which really evoked some of the great experimental filming done in the 60s, I think, late 50s and 60s, not all of which was good, by the way, but much of it you would find, I think, fascinating, even from a cinematographical view. Naeem is somebody who I haven't known for long, but he's somebody I want to work with. And last night we even talked about a certain collaboration about extremism, which I won't go into now because it's early days, but which I think really will push back on those who try to take away our freedoms. Question for you before we go to speak with Naeem, and this is by way of positioning you about the way he thinks and what he'll say. It won't be offensive. You don't have to lock your children away from this. What do you see cinematography being there for? Is it entertainment? I suppose it is at times, and I have no problem with that. Is it educational? Can it be world-changing? Can you think of a film which altered your mindset about the way that the world works? There are some films that have done that for me, Cry Freedom being one of the most impressive. I watched Cry Freedom in 1988, and I remember being moved from beginning to end. It's a film about a chap called Steve Biko, who was one of the great ambassadors of the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa when that country was still separated. And I won't spoil the film for you, but there is one scene in some great stadium where they start singing. And to this day, I watch it with tears. I watch it with a reverence to the ability of the director to evoke a feeling. And that film permanently changed my view about certain aspects of life. Are there films that have done that for you? I think my answer to the question that I've asked you, my opinion is that entertainment is an end in itself and it's justifiable. But sometimes someone comes along who has much more to say and perhaps they just make one film. My hope is that Naeem, who I'm going to introduce in just a minute, is somebody that I can collaborate with and do something which is actually society changing. That's early days. We only hatched the plan last night. but you'll have to be the judge. All of that, though, in this 40 minutes of creativity and culture with me, Len Vitopek, right here on TNT.
Conversations to inform and include.
It's meant for everyday people to understand.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Naeem Mahmoud, we meet again. How are you?
Very good, Lembit. Good to be back on the show. Exciting times. And it was good to see you yesterday at one of the screenings. How did you find it?
I absolutely loved it. You've earned your place on my show today because I've just been explaining to our viewers that I came to your screening last night of your documentary of an extraordinary film in terms of cinematographic values. A remarkable film, considering it had no budget, no script, and no permission. We'll come to that in a moment. Before we go into that, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get to be a film director and what motivates you?
So growing up in West London, I found school to be a potential killer and very disillusioned, just sitting in front of an authority figure who's telling you what's right and what's wrong. And I would bunk off school. And this is when I was about 15, and I would grab my local riffraff mates from the neighborhood, and we would go out with a little home video camera, and we would start shooting and making little films, expressing stories and things that we'd be going through as teenagers at the time. And what I found was making movies that way, being practical, that was an education. Suddenly maths becomes interesting because you're creating your own little budgets. You're knocking on doors and, you know, asking for locations and you start to interact with people. You start to communicate with people. And that was a great, that was the real education for me. Yeah, you know, you're right in there. So that started to grow. We made a few short films and eventually I ended up getting, I'd made a film which had won an award, a short film, and I got a job at ITV and I worked in television when I was younger. And I saw the whole machine, the television machine from the inside. And so I took the experience from that corporate world of television and started making my own independent films and to really look into the world that we're living in and who's pulling the strings, what's behind it, what's going on, particularly with my last film, Gods of Their Own Religion.
If I'd realized that you'd actually grown up in East London, I might not have bothered coming.
West
because
London.
I'm in
West
Surrey.
London.
Oh, West London, that's West fine London. Then. That's fine then. I actually go to East London for endless dental health problems I've got. But Whitechapel, I've always thought would be an absolutely fantastic, vibrant place to film. That is in East London. Incidentally, I envy you because just in terms of appearance, the way I'm dressed personifies the old mainstream filmmaking industry. The way you're dressed personifies your approach. But I've never pretended to be a fashion icon. A couple of things here. I'm just going to read these out as we go along. I'm inviting our viewers to share films that they think are of seminal importance. Sunday Girl has come out with two really great ones, Network with Beatty Zenrant and Wag the Dog. I'd add Bulworth to that, which is about a disillusioned senator. And I'll just keep reading them out without going too much detail. I want to talk about the actual film and what we saw last night shortly. But your decision to go into filmmaking is courageous because artists usually end up posthumously wealthy, wealthy after their death. Why didn't you choose a safer, more mainstream thing like making adverts where you can make a fortune for selling soap powder?
I mean, I have done some commercials and music videos and whatnot to pay the bills, as they say. But when I went into film, Lembit, it wasn't, I didn't approach it as this is a career. You know, I approached it more as this is an experience, you know, in terms of this reality that we're living in. Through filmmaking, I was able to not only be creative, but to connect with so many people because there's so many people involved in making a movie. And for me, it was a journey more so than a career. And what I found is when you are true to your art and you put yourself out there and you give it 100% and you also go against the status quo, things eventually come your way, opportunities come your way when you're authentic, you know, when you're your true self. And sometimes without even trying, there'll be opportunities that come your way financially, etc. But yeah, often it is a labor of love, like you saw with No Budget, No Script, No Permission. But boy, has that opened up so many more doors just going down that route and making that film in those almost war-torn conditions.
I'm going to, after the break in a moment, I'm going to talk about that actual film. We'll start by what the film's about, and then we'll talk about what we saw last night in a departure from our current linear discussion. And I'm sure you'll be happy with this. You're the one person I'll have on here who doesn't mind where we go without a script. I was talking about the death of my brother a couple of hours ago, and Mogden put a beautiful message in, and I asked Mogden to put it back in because I lost it just because there's so much going on. Let me just read this to you. And in a way, I think you'll appreciate this because it's got some artistic beauty. It's just a comment in the chat on tntradio.live, but it really sums things up. I was a bit late with this, but was out driving when I heard you say about the last day you had with your late brother. So sad, but a fantastic day, a very special moment for you. I call these my matchbox moments. Whenever I'm feeling a bit down and need a pickup, I can slide open that matchbox and I'm right back there in the moment. Sights, sounds, smells. I have several, definitely a few around my children, and one a special moment. The last time I went skiing, I stood on a deserted ski slope, having let everyone ski off. I stood there alone on that huge mountain. The snow was so white and the sky was such a deep blue against it. There wasn't a sound apart from a few birds calling high in the sky. I feel that I might be needing that moment a lot more over the next few years. Mogden, I found that moving. And actually, Naeem, I could see a short film from that. That is as close as you can get to establishing a film set. It shows that creativity is alive and well and living with our viewers, Naeem.
Absolutely. And what struck me with that poem, it's a reminder that in this modern day and age and in this technological world, that that need to switch off and to be with nature, to get away from it all. And just, you know, as you described, being on top of that mountain and hearing the birds and tuning into our senses, because we're often occupied left, right, and center, Zoom, tech, this, social media, and this, that, and the other. And that's almost stifling creativity. And what I've found in recent years, when I'm able to get away and have those moments, like, you know, describing that poem, even if it's not high up in the mountains, in the Swiss Alps or whatnot, but just in your garden or in a local park, you're able to kind of just center yourself again and just find that balance. And that's when you're able to really kind of tune into, you know, your core and get the real creative juices flowing.
I have to say, I can see a project, a nascent project here, Matchbox Moments. I thought of it first, Naeem. I thought of it first, but Mogden thought of it, actually. Matchbox Moments. I would love to see do a series of vignettes in a way. I like those kinds of films because often they're very accessible. And the theme at the end of the day is we all live in moments. Don't go anywhere, Naeem. After the break, I want to talk about your actual project and what we were watching last night and how you did it with no budget, no script, and no permission, with one of the liveliest leads, female leads I've ever seen on screen. This is Lembotopic. You tell us about it without the language. Some of the language got a bit colourful and we've got kids listening, so we've got to be careful with that. You're listening to the Lembotopic Show with Naeem Mahmood, who is a director who has just produced a thing of beauty. This is on today's News Talk TNT. See you in a moment.
TNT's Mark Morano.
And there's a whole history of this idea that the establishment, the powers that be, the regime in power, likes the idea of a little eco-terrorism to keep the population hungry. I mean, if you think about it, their policies, government policies of the Great Reset, Net Zero, Climate Agenda, are quite literally eco-terrorism or a form of terrorism. It's, as Jesse Jackson used to say, it's economic violence, it's economic terrorism. Jesse Jackson used to say that about the Reagan administration. But in this case, it's the intentional collapse of energy, food, transportation, free speech, all to achieve and make us safer and give them more power under the auspices, if you will, of a crisis.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Internet.
A stream online.
TNTRadio.live. Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Welcome back to the chaotic and eclectic world of live broadcasting. They say never work with children or animals. I'd say never work with children or animals, or Naeem, because my director, not really called the director of these shows, is trying to direct the director. He actually was telling him how to frame himself. Right. This is my man in my studio telling Naeem, who's here to talk about groundbreaking cinema. He's been told what to do. It's great. I'm loving it.
Honestly, I need it. You know, after the last film, I need to just kick back and someone just take the reins for a little while.
You're very magnanimous, I have to say. And I just feel so conservative in how I'm dressed now. Let's go back to what happened last night then. It sounds like I missed a great after show party.
Yeah,
because I had to be back. I had to be back in the hour far away from where I met you to be ready for my show, do the research. What time did your partying go on till after the screening last night?
Well, it went into the early hours, but I kind of got out there a little bit earlier than that. And that's just the bit of the self-discipline in me. So I think I got out of there about 1 or 2 or something like that. But I think people carried on till God knows, probably still going on now. But, you know, on that note, there's always been a side to me lately where I try and get out not too late now. And just trying to, just keep myself, you know, well-balanced. And that's an important part. It's almost like I heard this in football where you got people like Cristiano Ronaldo and those sort of guys, you know, they don't really party hard and, you know, they get out of there and then they're back in training the next morning. So I'm kind of more heading down that route. So it wasn't too bad.
I love garlic and swimming. Those two things make me feel good. I actually get some kind of a high from garlic, which is a wonderful thing because it lowers your blood pressure. That's probably what makes me feel good. And swimming. But then I'm 59. You're about 12. So you shouldn't be doing this yet.
I'll take that.
let's talk about...
I felt like 12 when they were telling me how to frame the shots.
Well, never let my
side of me.
Well, never let my gallery run live that down now. He'll be smarting. I'll be punished for that later on, I'm sure. Let's talk about the film that you've made, and then we'll talk about what we saw last night. Your film, if it's even possible to describe it, really, your film is called Gods of Our Own Religion. Tell us about that film and how it came about.
So Gods of Their Own Religion was very much born out of the 2020 lockdowns and a lot of the tyrannical measures that were being imposed, the dystopia, the mass psychosis, the madness, and just seeing the world around you at that time crumble, people losing their mind, following anti-health, insane diktats. I mean, just and that's just the tip of the surface, you know, just touching on the surface. And in March, April, you know, I had to get out there and shoot this movie. It was an important movie to make and to feed off everything that was going on around me and seep that into the movie Gods of Their Own Religion. It's set in a technocratic empire, a post-COVID film. And it's really a warning and an exploration into where this is all heading, and which is ultimately the consuming of the souls into AI and global dystopia. And that's what I was feeling at the time. And what you see in Gods of Their Own Religion, you know, there was no script, is very much a movie of the times, capturing 2020. And what you saw last night was the making of Gods of Their Own Religion and what went on behind the scenes in the most testing conditions.
Let's come to that in a moment. I've been asking my viewers to suggest films that should be seen. I won't have time to describe any of them. Also, it'll get confusing. Sunday Girl suggests They Live. absolute classic Sunday.
Oh, I was
absolute
just going to say that.
It really is.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
It's a bit of a cult film, actually, because you have to understand the allegory of it, actually. But it is absolutely brilliant. First time I saw it, I immediately got it. And I guess I realized I tried to conform, but I'm not very successful at it. Brilliant, brilliant film.
No.
I suggest
what we love about you, Lembit.
Yeah, that's right. I'm a maverick dressed like a conservative, I suppose. So last night, Gods of Their Own Religion, that's the film, which really was quite prescient, because you mentioned that AI takeover thing. You couldn't have known then that Elon Musk and his outfit would be able to implant microchips into somebody's head. That's actually happened. It's not far. I don't want to spoil the film at all. It'd be impossible, actually, to describe the film. You have to see it. But it'd be like describing a piece of modern art or something in words. But you seem to be ahead of the curve. Now, you last night were premiering the making of. Tell us why it's called, there's perhaps a clue in the name, No Budget, No Script, No Permission.
Well, in 2020 March, when we set about making this movie, you know, and April, everything was locked down. There was nothing, everything completely shut. Industry, any potential backing, funding, locations. So you're pretty much starting from scratch. There's nothing to sort of to feed off apart from all the madness that's going around me. But I had this vision to really create the ultimate movie that would capture the times of 2020, and I had to find a way to create this grandiose yet complex movie. With pretty much nothing, little resources, but I just had a belief, and I threw away all the rule books, everything that you've been conditioned with of how to make films or how to get creative projects off the ground or how to produce a movie, all of that. I just threw it all away and just went back into my intuition, my heart, my instincts, and just using energy and manifestation and visualization to make this happen. And slowly we built a team, and that seeped into everyone that was working on the movie. And bit by bit, we just almost opened up this path when everything was shut, and we're able to pull this off against all the odds. I mean, films have been made on low budgets, perhaps no budgets before, but also in the test, you know, what was really difficult was doing it in 2020, in the most difficult conditions. And also when everyone, you know, it felt like the world's against you, you know, even if you set foot outside the house, you know, you're already under pressure. So,
but you had
the cast of a lifetime moment.
You had a massive crowd of extras at a time when we weren't even meant to be even visiting our own granny. How did you pull that off?
There was a lot of people who were struggling at that time, and they needed an outlet. You know, they were locked down, big mental health issues. You know, I've done a lot of youth work before as well, and a lot of the people involved in the film were young people. And a lot of these guys began to struggle with the whole lockdown. Where is this going? What's happening? So much confusion. And working on this film was just an outlet to get creative again, find some sanity in an insane world, and to have that human connection, which was lacking. Everyone was separated, and it was needed big time for a lot of people. You know, even the lead actress that you were talking about earlier, I mean, she was really on the verge of going down some
nervous breakdown, to quote another film.
yeah. But even you know, it was even more serious than that, you know, without going into the details. And she said to me, I remember the time, that, you know, if I wasn't working on this film that time, I don't know what I would have done with myself. You know, it was bordering on, you know, she really going off the edge without going into detail. So it was a massive outlet for people, and people came together. It didn't matter what views you had, and, you know, what was your background or any of that stuff. Well, once you get creative, all of that goes away. Everyone mucks in. We're like little kids again, you know. It's like little kids playing in the dirt, in the mud, you know, not being sort of sanitized and muzzled and separated. We're sort of back into our natural state. And And yeah, people's health, mental health, physical health, all of that sort of stuff seemed to improve. It was an incredible experience. And to this day, I get messages from people who worked on the film Lembit that say to me, looking back, you know, doing that film at that time meant everything to them. It was more than just making a film. It was the human interaction and human connection that was super important, especially in a time where we've been consumed by tech big time, work from home and all of that sort of stuff.
While you were doing that serious work during the lockdown, I was already committed to doing the first 30 minutes or so of my rather lightweight parody about politics,
Mr. Calamari.
Yeah. So I was over in Corfu. You were having these people talking about this dystopian future, the transhumanism, the darkness, the kind of 28 days later empty streets. And I was in Corfu eating calamari with 35, 40 people, one or two of whom went nuts in the crew and disappeared while we were making it. Others who were thinking it was a great fun time. I actually feel that I must be the most superficial director you've ever met. Couldn't be more different.
It's a good thing I hadn't met you at that time, Lembit. I probably would have got swayed and ended up joining you in Corfu.
You'd have had a great, great time. And once again, the things I can't share now, because when we're a global station, it's always a family show. But I will tell you this, that the joie de vivre we felt, and this is the commonality with the 40 people who we had to ship out individually and separately because you weren't allowed to travel as a group and everything else. We got a third of a ton of equipment somehow onto an aeroplane to take it all out there. When they got there, almost all of them said, this is just incredible. This is the first actual proper team experience we've had. Some of them had been living with families and so on. But it was the first thing they'd done as a team since the lockdown. And then there was such sadness when people came back again. And I could see in the documentary, No Budget, No Script, No Permission, that same sense of belonging and that same sense of loss when it ended. There must have been an anticlimax when it was over.
Yes, I mean, what it meant to people was massive. And, you know, by the time it was over, things started to open up a bit. So kind of people went back into their sort of daily lives and daily routines. But for that moment in time, it was huge. And even to this day, as I was saying, you know, I still get messages of what it meant to them. It was, an incredible time and very emotional still, you know, to this day, watching it yesterday and it brings it all back. And, but I'm so glad that we went down that route and produced this film, which people tell me is a movie that no one has dared to make, you know. And
I keep talking, Aviko.
No.
You got me excited. I'll tell you this. Other thing I noticed is, my film represents the mood of Corfu at the time. People went there for liberation. We didn't really break any rules there. It was very relaxed in terms of lockdown. They took a very sensible attitude towards it, and the local authorities were very cooperative. So the film, the parody, it actually reflects the joyousness of people in Corfu. By the same token, I suspect you could not have got that mood that is deeply ingrained in your film if the streets had been normal. There are moments of tumbleweed, essentially, the emptiness of the city. I know you also had to play a few games of the traffic. I just don't think you could have made that film without having a £100 million budget if there hadn't been a lockdown.
Yes, but it wasn't just the empty streets that fed the mood, obviously, you know, that added a lot, but it was the whole atmosphere. It was the atmosphere around. The energy was very surreal. And the longer it went, it was very, very dark, you know, and what you see in the film, it's capturing that atmosphere and that mood and that energy of that time. Was just, and then people are starting to sort of, there's that divide and rule, and people are starting to battle amongst each other, and this whole psychosis, and then the mask mandates came, and all of this anti-health, anti-science, measures, and just madness, and it was a really surreal energy. It almost felt like there's forces in the unseen now that are really behind this, dark forces that are in the living room now, And and I could, you know, even with my family, my mom, my parents, the anxiety, the stress, all of it. So the mood you see in there is beyond just the empty streets, the empty lockdown streets. You know, it's a whole lot more. It's almost capturing a mind virus that's really behind this. Because it was a psychosis. People were, you know, just on mass levels conforming to a lot of, you know, a lot of madness.
After the break, I want to talk with you about where you think our society is. And I do feel like I'm really going to lobby you to do something about extremism. We may or may not share that today. But let me just, before we go to the break, let me read something from Mogden, who produced that, what you called a poem. And Mogden, that's a compliment. An award-winning director has complimented your comment on the chat as poetry. Mogden adds, I'm a qualified swim teacher, Lembit. If you ever want any tips, and outdoor swimming is euphoric, creates a natural high, you're on, Mogden. Absolutely. I did some, what's it called, free swimming in a river sometime in Wales, and it was cold, and it was so invigorating. And nothing's quite like swimming in the ocean, including cold oceans as well. But in the ocean of cinematography, we couldn't have a better captain than Naeem. We're going to let him navigate us to his views about what needs to be said in broadcasting and indeed in cinema in a few minutes. This is the Lembit OPIC show on today's News Talk. See you in a moment.
I said, could she die? And the doctor said she could. It was so scary.
When I started clawing at my neck and trying to breathe, and I thought, you know, what are we going to do if I die here? How's everyone going to go on?
When someone's gravely sick or injured in the bush, they rely on the Royal Flying Doctor Service. But now the Flying Doctor needs your help to fund vital medical equipment and supplies. Please search Flying Doctor online to give a regular gift of just $10. You can help equip the Flying Doctor's teams to respond to any emergency anywhere. Search Flying Doctor online. Become a part of the Royal Flying Doctor Service and help save lives in the bush.
I want to eat apples and bananas. I need to eat apples and bananas. Why can't I eat apples and bananas?
Support the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks to help provide meals to those in need. Join us at feedingamerica.org.
Lembit OPIC on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to today's News Talk, where you are observing the very conservative director of filming, Lembit OPIC, and the very avant-garde director of free thought, Naeem Mahmood, who has... it would be to put an energy discussion. Two grapefruit-sized bits of uranium lighting up the city of free speech. I can see the opening now. My original production company was called Last Minute Productions, and it had one of those cartoon bombs when it goes tss, and then somebody cuts it, then it comes on and it explodes. But unfortunately, ooh, Last Minute, I could actually make a fortune out of lastminute.com, but I'd rather think of new ideas and so on. Let them try and sue me for using it. The names are coming in. I was asking for great films. Sunday Girl says The Manchurian Candidate, the original version, absolutely agree. Intense, black and white. Some would say that we've had more than one Manchurian candidate as president of the United States. Who knows? But maybe that's not fair. Maybe it's just not fair. Not fair at all. I give myself an A+. Anyway, moving on. Let's go back to Naeem.
You've got to be in front of the camera on the next film, Lembit, man. That was a pretty good impression.
Well, okay, just honestly, I'll do anything for you. I'm very happy to come. I am auditioning. This isn't anything to do with the viewers. Viewers can go hang. Just give me that break. I'll do anything for it, director. Ash Mahmoud, you might know him, says, proud of my dear brother by his virtuoso masterpiece, Gods of Their Own Religion. Cast and crew were out of work during lockdown with no furlough. The UK film and cultural industries were following and enthralled to the COVID narrative. But Naeem was the only one going against the grain. Fair play, Ash. And thanks for the orange juice last night as well. I owe him a drink, which was great. How good was I?
Love you, brother.
And it was a real pleasure. And I will take you up on that great other thing that we were discussing last night. Ash, you're blessed to have a great brother there. And really, sincerely, right behind you there. Seb says, the film that woke me up was Bambi, aged around 4, set me on my current path. Bambi, if you see Bambi, it's so touching. And it's actually really difficult because it's not all cotton wool. It's not insulating people from the pain of death, actually. Lots more comments there coming in. I'll get back to them in a minute, but I want to carry on talking. Oh, Max and Stacey, Mr. Moose says, I think that's a film. Aren't they watching them? But somebody says, when Elaine says, catch up with you later. Yeah, you've got to watch. It's mandatory. It's the rules. You're an extremist. Actually, are you an extremist? Not an extremist if you watch me. once again, I'll let you answer this question again. Holly's asking, where can one watch this movie? Tried one link, but it's got some weird membership thing. When can people watch Children? Children of a Lesser God, Gods of Their Own Religion.
That could be the title for the sequel.
I think it's been done. Gods of Their Own Religion. Where can people watch that?
So it's not going to be released on any digital platforms just yet. We're going to have a lot of screenings coming up. We've already had a lot of screenings. There's going to be more screenings coming up across the UK. So pop-up screenings. So stay tuned. Just look out for Gods of Their Own Religion. We've got quite a bit coming up in London in the next couple of months. So turn up, come and meet the cast and crew. And we're also going abroad. We've got a screening coming up in Poland now in April, one in Ibiza, which is going to be a bit of a party as well. Looking forward to that. So we're really enjoying the in-person events. And I think that's really important, to meet with people at the screenings, to connect, to share inspiration, etc. And again, I think that's a whole big part of what was lost in, you know, the last couple of years, that the human interaction, the in-person events, you know. So we're not going to be going on to digital just yet, probably later in the end of the year, end of the year, I would say. So just stay tuned. We've got screenings to be announced across the UK and abroad.
Holly, and also Just a Bloke, I think you had to go now. Definitely go. I'm definitely going to come to one of the big screenings, because this is award-winning cinema, in my view, because it's so different. And let's talk about that. One thing I noticed, and I'm increasingly noticing in my work with today's News Talk, which isn't just a passive broadcasting job, I see this as an active social contribution to reclaiming our freedom. What I'm noticing is that the individual puddles of free thinking have become a pond, and maybe ponds will form a lake, and lake eventually an ocean. Piers Corbyn, who is one of the mayoral candidates last night, the one who's biggest on peace, he was there. He made a speech, in fact. It seems to me that your work and the people behind it are also political activists. Lots of people there are talking about Palestine, for example. We don't need to go into the subject today. But is there any sense that you're trying to generate a movement, or is that the waste product of your statements?
It's a product of the statements, what you saw yesterday. And the movement for me is more so than political. The movement is really about taking the power back. Creatives, particularly young creatives, taking the power back to self and not giving it away to institutions and corrupt universities that are just killing potential and not really equipping you with the tools to become the better version of yourself to create these incredible projects. Young creatives, let's say, for example, in the film industry, have the power to create their own studios, create their own films, to revitalize British cinema. But they won't do it if they go down this same old indoctrinated programmed curriculum that just ultimately trains them to become cogs in a wheel to serve big corporations, rather than let's now create our own studios, our own production companies, and really, because they've got the voices, they've also got the know-how on how to market to these films, but they're just not taught or given that encouragement to do so and the tools. So the message is really about get out there. You know, you can do a lot more bigger projects than you think you can, and you have a lot more power than you think you can. And you're almost being pawned, you're being hoodwinked by these corporations and institutions who want to keep you buried, keep your head in the sand, keep your head on your mobile phone. And that's the, I think, the message is be the best version of yourself, and that will lead to creating much more greater projects.
Lisa says in the chat, "Gee, Lambert, still on. He's got some stamina. I hope you're being polite there. I hope you're not saying next." It's actually not difficult to do this this show, even though I'm on for a long time, because like with the film I admire the most, it's authentic. We don't make things up. I'm not a different person off air as I am on air. To what extent do you feel that you have to play act when you're directing, or are you the same person? I haven't seen you in a directing environment. I've just seen the product of it.
No, with the directing, for me, you've the authenticity is what comes across and what people ultimately connect with, because they can see through, people can see through some of the bullshit, you know, when you're on set.
Don't use language like that. There's kids listening. All right, carry on. It's all right. Yeah. All right, go on. It's all right. Don't do it again. It's not because I'm trying to be cool. I just don't want to upset kids. That's all it is.
But go on. That was just a little taster of me on set there.
Okay, oh, I see. Yeah, I brought it on myself then. All right, go on. Yeah, go on anyway.
but it's no nonsense. You know, when you're on set, it's no nonsense. It's clear communication. You know, don't beat around the bush and be truthful to people. Be honest, you know, what to expect, what it's going to entail. And there's no time to beat around the bush. So to pull off these grandiose projects with very little, you've got to get everyone involved. You've got to treat people with respect. You've got to get to know them. You've got to put yourself in their shoes and try to see things how they, you know, see it, and not just be all about me, you know. Get everyone involved and make it collaborative. And that and to do that, you've got to be authentic and you've got to be really clear in your communication. So what you see is what you get. I think in my younger days, there was, you know, more ego. You're sort of trying to create an act at times because you're conditioned that way. Or, you know, I must hit these targets, or I've got to, you know, get my film out to this audience and all of this, that. But that all went with Gods of Their Own Religion, because it wasn't about the audience or what does the distributor want or they want. It's about creating a true work of art that's going to capture those times and a very important film as well. So there's no time to sort of put on an act or any of this stuff. You know, you just got to get down to it, but also have some fun, you know, in this reality. You know, we're almost living in a virtual reality. It's a simulation. It's just a dream, as Bill Hicks, the great comedian, once said. So have some fun with it. Let go, let loose, and express your true self and not conform to what society wants you to be, or how you must act or dress or speak and all of that, or what you should create and all of that stuff. Let go of that. Come back to core and just get out there. It's one hell of a ride. It's just a roller coaster. And that kind of freed me up even more, that understanding to just to be my true self and let it all out.
Is that your polite way of telling me to take my tie off? I'm not going to conform with your demand. Nah, not going to conform.
I actually like a bit of the red, you know, that bit of red just gives a little bit of danger. I know there's that bit of ST, Lemmy, so it's a little reminder there.
It's a double-edged sarcastic sword there. But I actually wear these clothes for a very simple reason. I'm colorblind, and I'm not totally colorblind, but I can't really tell purple from blue and so on. So I just wear very conventional clothes so that my clothes don't become the story.
If I could add, you know, like a suit for me as well. I sometimes wear a suit and stuff like that and mix it up, have some fun. You know, I worked, one of the sponsors of the film who supplied some of the costume was Maurice Sedwell of Savile Row. And I did a lot of work with Savile Row and the guy who ran Savile Row, Andrew Ramroop, incredible tailor. He was one of my mentors. And from him, I kind of understood the power of the suit and when to wear the suit. So for me, it's not just edgy, funky clothes, you know. I mix it up with suits as well. And I like the fact that, you know, one shouldn't box themselves into these boxes. Experiment, try things, have some fun. So, you know, the only reason I've been dressed down a little bit today is because of a little bit of a late night last night. So
you're fashionable. I mean, you're making it sound like I go swimming in my tie. Skippy says they're being.
I wouldn't put it past you, let me.
So they can haul me out because of my age. Yeah. Just one other thing about what you're describing about conformity. I've spent a lot of my life trying to conform. I just can't by nature do it. Whereas others try to pretend that they are non-conformists, but they all non-conform in the same way, which is a bit ironic. Skippy says they're being smart not launching online to stop the film being pirated. But I've got the sense that you're trying to make people make a physical commitment to the film. You're probably going to win awards anyway. Is it actually strategic or is it just pragmatic to have the physical launch?
The physical launch for me is it's instinctual. I mean, one thing I've kind of not gravitated towards is this whole tech culture. And particularly when I was making this film, you know, none of this Zoom stuff and all of that and social media, get off all of that. Just get down, meet with the people, get on set, get practical. So that's a big thing for me. And the energy you feel that when you're amongst people with the physical release, for instance, is just a whole different ballgame. It's a whole, when you're in it, we sold out the Cineworld Leicester Square for the big premiere, the big super screen. And we had hundreds of people there. From every walk of life, every political view, it was mayhem. But just having that energy and everyone being there and sharing and exchanging that, like you saw yesterday, there was a bit of that. You know, you just can't beat that interaction when we're all together in a space. And cinema for me is all about seeing this movie on the big screen. You know, it's a visual feast, as Gods of Their Own Religion. There's not much dialogue in it. And the attention to detail with the cinematography, it was designed and built for the big screen. And that's where it ultimately has to be experienced.
Lisa says, that's not what I meant at all then, but I know you weren't really saying that you wanted me to move on. I was just having a joke. I'm just very pleased that you're here, Lisa. And please come back next Saturday. Don't be offended by me. Seb says, it's a tough stint being part of the audience at times. Thanks for that, Seb. I'll try harder, maybe. Moose to Moose gets praise. Lisa in the house says, Miss Moose. Holly says, he hasn't got any trousers on. Do you mean me or do you mean our avant-garde director?
Holly? How does Holly know? Is Holly in the room? What's he doing?
Don't answer the question. Better that people see the film in the real world, says Skippy. You keep your tie on. I love a man in a suit, says Lisa. All is forgiven, even if you were insulting me before. We're pretty much out of time. We didn't even get to talk about extremism, but maybe you and I can get together and talk about a very interesting project, which might turn everything about extremist definitions on their head. If you're interested, I'll buy lunch or whatever you want, whatever you have at lunchtime, a fruit shoot, maybe. I don't know what you have. And we can talk about that. So it would be an interesting collaboration to share different styles, potentially, but a shared view of libertarianism and the need for free thinking. What's your next project planned at the moment? You've only got 10 seconds to answer that. What are you doing next after this?
Gods of Their Own Religion is part one of the dystopian trilogy. We're going to go much, much deeper into the rabbit hole with the next two parts. Brave New World, 1984, all of that going way, way deep.
Well, thank you so much. We're out of time. I really enjoyed having you here. And thanks for last night. We'll see you soon. And Piers Corbyn, great to see him there as well. He really is a free thinker too. He's looking for money, actually, at the moment to stand for Mayor of London. But that's a story for another time. That is Naeem Mahmood, who is the director of Gods of Their Own Religion. It will be on physical release. Make the effort to go. My time with you is up now. Thank you so much to my team. Thanks to my guests. Thanks to those in the gallery as well. You'll make a great director one day, mate, as well. I'll be back next Saturday and who knows, during the week as well. Naeem's laughing in an ironic kind of way there. Whatever you're doing, do yes, I'll choose the place. Whatever you're doing today, have an excellent day. Make sure TNT's in the background. My name's Len Bitopic. Have a wonderful time. I'll see you very soon on TNT. Bye-bye.